Linoleum knife.
Happy Easter weekend, everyone.
And Passover.
And all that stuff.
This is Good Friday.
Yes.
Normally we don't do this on Friday. Normally we wait till like
Sunday morning.
Saturday morning, Sunday afternoon. But everything's really booked this weekend.
It's true.
With us.
We have a full docket.
Popular, and people want to do things with us, and, you know.
I couldn't even.
It's how life is, really, for us all the time.
I couldn't even put together a drive-in field trip
super popular
to
like
celebrate
this.
The opening of Furious 7, because we had too much stuff happening.
This is a podcast of the cinema, by the way.
It is.
It's a hosted by you and me.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me who you are.
We are Free to Be. Has there ever been a drag queen named Free to Be You and Me?
There has probably been a drag queen named everything by this point.
I guess, yeah. There's no good names left.
I don't know that there are names. I mean, there's always going to be someone come up with a crazy new name.
Yeah.
Because so often they play on pop culture stuff that's already,
right,
know, that's going on at that moment. And that they hope will, you know, resonate down through the years after they've been that character for 10 or
right,
whatever, 15 years. But, yeah, there probably has been a Frida Be You and Me or whatever. You know what I mean? I who knows? I'm not.
Which is a reference that is sailing over the heads of anyone.
I don't watch.
Under the age of 35 or so, anyway.
I don't watch RuPaul's Drag Race.
I don't
so
either.
So I don't know even the names that wind up on television. I don't even know those names. I'm not like being like, I don't watch RuPaul's Drag Race because I'm too, you know, good for that.
Fancy.
There's just too much television to deal with, and I don't have
a moment. I watched season one, and it was entertaining, and then I just never got around to going back to it. And I know it's one of the few things keeping Loco afloat at the moment, but but they do at least have. Anyway, we haven't talked about who we are yet.
Tell me, who are you?
I'm Alonzo Duralde. I'm the film reviews editor for The Wrap and a film critic on What the Flick on the Young Turks Network on YouTube. And you, sir?
Dave White.
Of movies.com.
Yes.
That's where you are.
Actually, I'm here is where I am.
Dave White of The Kitchen Table.
I am Linoleum Knife proud. my family. Is Linoleum Knife.
We were working on our Vin Diesel impersonations earlier today.
Dave White. I'm no good at any impersonations of anyone ever. Mm. And so I can only do a Vin Diesel that sounds like me.
Mm.
But Vin Diesel's voice is not only significantly deeper than mine.
You have to make your...
But there's a mushiness to it that I can't quite...
You have to kind of make your lips vibrate.
Yeah, I'm not good at that.
I don't have friends. I have family.
I'm waiting for him to play the role that he was really born for, which is one of the tiki idols on Easter Island. Barring that, Groot, I think, is as close as we're going to get to the ideal Vin Diesel role.
What movie would a tiki idol on Easter Island be?
Rapa Nui.
Sure.
There's been one.
So, like I said, it's Good Friday.
Yeah.
Except it's not a Good Friday.
It's a warm Friday.
No, it's not even. That's nothing. I'm not talking about the weather. Right. I'm not discussing anything so banal as the weather.
Excuse me, sir. Why is it not a Good Friday, Dave White?
You know why.
I really don't.
Think about what you've done.
Oh, this will be rich.
Think about what you've done.
Why am I barely registering on the audio? Why are you so loud and I'm so not loud? That's so weird.
Is this your... What thing are you in?
It's sweetie, again, you're pointing to the headphones.
I like it when you call me sweetie on
the
show.
You point to the headphones like that doesn't have anything to do with
the
microphones.
By the way, we're married. I don't know, new listeners, I think that's a thing that
you
may not,
you didn't know
yet. He doesn't just call anyone sweetie. I'm the only sweetie. Oh, now that we got a hum.
There we go.
You're ruining everything.
Now, look, at least I'm, at least my, at least now I know my mic is on. I don't know that it was before.
Do we need to stop and go back?
Hang on,
to
let's listen to you. Hang on,
pause
hold
it.
On.
We'll be right back. Well, now that's fixed.
Okay.
For now.
Yes. You could hear me the whole time. It just was, yes. I wasn't getting much on the squiggle.
So
right, what have I done that is ruining your Friday?
You had to go shoot your mouth off about the police.
Oh, this. Thank you to someone.
And talk about it in every talk about it on the show last week, that documentary, and then talk about it while we were waiting for Furious 7 to start so that Matt Atchity could tell me.
No. Matt brought it up because he had just interviewed Andy Summers at Rotten Tomatoes.
The not Sting one.
Right.
Yeah.
The not Sting one and the not Stuart Copeland one. He had just interviewed him at the Rotten Tomatoes studios, and that's why he brought it up. And then he and I talked about how they're awesome and how you're a dink for being like, oh, I'm too book rough with blues. Because you're so cool, Dave White. So punk rock.
Okay, so then.
Metal is a tennis bracelet, I believe.
Yeah. We've heard your cute little joke already. Already we've heard the cute little joke about that. Find a new one.
The only metal you visit regularly is a T-ball.
Here, as you know, you don't hear any of the music
I know
that I listen to because I'm very, very, very spousally considerate, and I put on headphones all the time.
And have I ever made you listen to a single police song ever?
Yeah, you have.
No.
Also Sting solo, which is even worse.
Not true.
Oh, no. Yes, yeah, very much true. Back in Dallas in 1995, you owned a Sting CD. Blue Turtles one or whatever.
I have never owned that.
Yes, you did.
No.
You had a Sting CD.
No, an ex of mine had it, and I talked about it, but no, you somehow had extrapolated
it.
That.
No, you had it. It was in your apartment, and you had it on.
That's not true.
And I questioned that my involvement.
That is not. I've never owned a Sting solo CD. You're making stuff up now.
Okay, so anyway, here's what happened.
Thank you to a listener whom I don't know who it is because it came with no receipt.
It came with no.
It came without packages, boxes, or tags.
Well, it came without a return address or name or anything.
It was purchased on the internet and sent to me.
Somebody bought you. What is this?
It's The Police, Synchronicity Concert DVD.
Oh, God.
Which I actually was at this concert.
It was mildly interesting that you were at the show itself.
It was filmed over several nights in Atlanta, and that's when I saw The Police my senior year in high school.
My life is just going to get worse and worse now from this moment on.
I'm not going to play it around you, Dave White, because you are incapable of allowing The Police to come up in conversation without letting everyone in a 500-yard radius know that you are not into them. And that you are too cool for them. So I am going to spare myself the agita, much less you, by not making you listen to any of it.
I just am not... No. I'm quite upset.
You're a pill, is what you are.
What stupid songs are on that thing?
It's Shut Up. It's mostly songs off of Synchronicity, but not entirely.
So all of the stupid songs.
Shut Up. And it's directed by Godley and Cream, so.
Oh, them.
Yes. They were like the 10cc people.
They were a thing.
Yeah, and then they were.
They had that song. Remember that song? They had that song, the Cry song?
Oh, yeah, they had all the creepy faces morphing into
faces,
each other.
All the faces, Cry faces.
Yeah.
It was all like, Cry!
I can't even do it. It's like this.
Hang on. I'm gonna get it. There. That's my impersonation of that song, and it sounds like and that song, the way I just sang it, is better than any song by The Police.
Shut up. I'll post the video for that on our Facebook page, because if you've never seen the Cry video, it does have some of the craziest falsetto you've ever heard. probably created in the studio. I don't know that a human voice can do what that song does. It's beyond like Minnie Riperton even. Anyway, you're wrong about the police, and even if you aren't, you need to shut up about the police because you're tiresome, Dave White.
I'm full of life.
You're just pissed because, for once, a gift was sent that was not just for you. I got you guys all these teas.
No. You know what? Lovely listeners have delivered unto.
That's true.
This home.
It's joint gifts. Chocolates and saffron things, and things.
Saffron that I have used to make delicious dinners.
Yes.
For you.
But also we get stuff that is clearly for you and that is sent to both of us. And not even by listeners. Like, friends do that.
Not only was this week was I assaulted by this DVD.
The DVD, he means the actual physical object, not my playing of it.
And Matt actually telling me I'm dumb.
Well, you are.
For not liking the police.
Live with that.
One of your coworkers encouraging you to tell me to get a hearing aid.
Well.
And then our friend Alinda telling me the same thing. Absolutely unrelated to that moment.
Yeah, Alinda mentioned it independently. And Alinda, who has been on this program, Alinda Weed Savage of People Magazine. And then, my coworker, I was telling her that story. She goes, yes, he should. Because that's how I got mine. I used to be in bands and went to see them. And that's why I lost the rest of my hearing.
Everyone's out to get me this week.
Yeah, no. So in other words, so Dave is because he's too cool for hearing aids, you can't talk to him when water's running. Much less at Buffalo Wild Wings when there's like 10 TVs on and music blaring and heaven knows what else. By the way, they have not responded yet.
Oh, really?
To your complaint. My angry internet complaint.
We walk in there. Because, you know, Buffalo Wild Wings is right next to...
The AMC Burbank.
The AMC Burbank, where the Furious 7 screening was.
Yeah, they showed it to us in actual IMAX, not like fakey IMAX.
And so we go in there, and we're going to have our Furious Wings.
Yes.
That's the meal you eat before Furious, Fast and Furious movie. Buffalo Wild Wings. We get in there, and we sit down at 6:04. And by 6:16, we had not even yet been acknowledged that we were sitting at a table.
Yeah.
No drinks, no order, not even anyone saying, oh, I'm sorry, I'm running around crazy.
Somebody be with you in a second.
Yeah. Nothing. And
so there were five people gadding about the foyer.
So we just got up and left and we went to the Chipotle, but you complained on the internet.
Yeah, I got on my phone. And
You went into their complainty form, but they haven't responded.
They have not. And that was, what, Wednesday?
I guess, I don't know.
It's been 48 hours. I demand satisfaction.
No, it was Monday.
No, it was Monday. That's right. Okay.
It's been
longer than 48 hours.
How dare they?
They're the worst.
We're going back there, though, because wings.
I know. I love that place. And ideally, we're going back there with a coupon after they email me back.
You were just wrangling for a coupon.
Well, no, I mean... I was complaining to complain, but a coupon would be nice. A coupon would go a long way towards making me never go there again.
Or toward making you go there again.
What did I say?
Never go there again.
Well,
yeah,
whatever. Yes, okay.
I know what you mean.
I talk big. We never went to Panera again, heaven knows.
Well, that place is gross.
That was awful.
That wasn't about the service. That was about the food.
Everything.
That was about the food. The one good thing. Before Furious 7 was meeting the listener.
Yes.
And her name?
I want to say it's Romina.
Rowena?
I think it's Romina.
Romina? I keep looking at my new iron, which is a Rowenta.
That's not her name.
Rowenta. I got a Rowenta Steemium.
That's great.
That's what I got. And ironing is a pleasure now.
Good. Do more of it.
But her name was not Rowena.
It was not Rowena.
It's not Rowenta. No,
it was Romina.
Not Steemium.
It was definitely not
Steemium. Wouldn't it be great if we had a listener named Steemium?
They call me Steamy for short.
Romina?
Romina. I believe Romina was her name. And she was very lovely. And she immediately recognized your voice when we were checking in to the screening.
Oh.
And she listens to the show. She is not a film critic. She is a toy designer.
I think that's a cool job.
Yeah, it's super. It's very cool. She's designing the Furious 7 line of
Maybe we shouldn't say that. Maybe it's a secret.
Well, the movie came out today, so I would imagine the toys are probably.
You don't know if it's a secret.
I think that the toys probably are on the market now. So
maybe.
And I don't. Are they? Are we talking cars or action figures or both?
I don't know.
Can you put your like Dom Toretto inside of
his... Why aren't there action figures for the whole cast? And
there might be
for kids.
We haven't looked.
There might be.
You want a Gal Gadot?
I want a Giselle,
so that she will live forever.
So she'll live forever.
Maybe
don't you make fun of me for crying about Giselle dying? You cried at the end of this one.
Yeah, but Paul Walker's actually dead.
So is Giselle.
Maybe sold separately, they have the giant plane, and you can have her like reenact her.
No, I'm not going to reenact her death.
Her sacrifice for Han, so that he would live long, except that he then dies like the next scene when he's in Japan at the end of 6.
Okay, so this movie.
Oh, Furious 7.
It's so great.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
James Wan, who did the Saw movies, or at least the first Saw movie, and The Conjuring, and Insidious?
Insidious, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's... Oh, yeah. What is with my microphone?
That's so weird. Everything's wrong with your mic.
He is stepping in for Justin Lin, who is the guy who pretty much... Fireman's carried this franchise into someplace interesting, first with Tokyo Drift and then with 5 and 6.
Oh, he didn't do 4?
No.
Who did 4?
4 was like...
We don't know. Keep going.
I don't remember. Okay. Anyway. So Juan's taking over and very much in the style of what 5 and 6 sort of threw down in terms of making this... These are superhero movies now. These are completely nutty... Like, you know, they get sent on missions and, you know, they're globetrotting and, you know, they're literally driving cars out of planes with parachutes attached to them.
They have, you know, criminal mastermind brains, all of them.
Yes.
Yeah, they are not the criminals.
No. Now they have always been the good guys-ish. Yeah.
and especially now.
Yes. They work with the feds, namely The Rock.
And speaking of the feds and The Rock, what happened to Eva Mendes?
Eva Mendes.
She was like his secretary or something at one point, wasn't she?
Was she?
I thought she was.
In these movies?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Are you thinking of
the Brazilian lady who was in love with Dom and then Letty turned out not being dead?
No. Hang on.
I think you are making this up.
I think this
was a dream you had.
No.
Where Eva Mendes was in the Fast and the Furious movies.
No, she was in Fast 5, uncredited, as his, like, office person. And that was it.
Well... Clearly, that was all she was ever going to be. Or they would have.
Well, I want her.
They would have given her like a character and credited her.
Come back.
Well, I'm sure she's got.
She's very pretty, and I want her to come back.
She's great. I'm sure she had other stuff to do. Anyway, let that go. So this time around, having just saved the world from Owen Shaw, played by Luke Evans. Turns out now Owen Shaw's brother Deckard, who's played by Jason Statham, is a black ops bad news guy who wants revenge on all these folks, and he does that first by beating the crap out of The Rock and putting him in the hospital.
Yes.
And then as we saw at the end of Fast and Furious 6, killing Han at the end of the drag race at the end of Tokyo Drift. So now these movies finally loop back upon themselves because there's actually a scene where Dom goes to Japan and meets Lucas Black, who is somehow still in high school.
He's 32 years old, by the way, now.
He was already...
That's not a made-up number.
He was 26 in the first movie and playing a high schooler.
Yes. Now but he looked like he could be 17.
Sure.
In the first.
Now he's 32. And
sort of.
It's that same night.
He still had a receding hairline. even in Tokyo Drift, but...
Yeah, the opening credits in this movie will fool you because, like, they list Gal Gadot, and we thought, oh, is she not dead? Or is there going to be a flashback?
No. Well, you don't know, because the thing about this movie, we talked about this today on Madeline Brand.
People die and they come back.
People die and they come back. People die more than once. People are involved in giant destructive collisions, and they should really be dead based on the natural laws of physics.
Do people really die and come back, or do they just rejigger the timeline? Is there anybody besides Han who died and then like suddenly there they are again?
Lenny!
Well, okay, yes, fine. You're right.
She was dead.
You're right.
And
then
suddenly, oh, you know what?
Amnesia.
She did not get blown up that much.
Just a little.
She only got sort of blown up. Good as new.
Anyway, so Gal Gadot's in the opening credits, but she's basically in a photograph. And Lucas Black is in the opening credits, and he gets a scene to
spackle that.
Yeah, that bit of continuity.
Scene, yeah.
So now the franchise is back, has looped itself, and
is
back in order.
Simultaneously 2015 and 2006.
Yeah, but so now that it has circled back to the end of Tokyo Drift, so now it's all forward from here.
Yes.
And so they, to fight off Jason Statham, they are approached by Kurt Russell as a sort of CIA spook, literally goes by the name Mr. Nobody.
In the most glamorous of entrances.
Yeah, like literally the thing where he steps out of the car and the camera starts at his feet and just works its way up.
Like he's some bikini model. Yeah.
It's like the way they introduce Stephen Sondheim in Camp when he gets out of his limo.
The way the red carpet camera approaches Kate Blanchett and she scolds them for it.
Oh, really?
Did you not see that?
No.
The camera moved all the way up her body on the red carpet one day, and she leaned down before it could get all the way up. And she said, "Do you do this to the men?"
Yeah. Good on her.
Yeah, she's great.
So Kurt Russell basically sends them off to go chase this MacGuffin doohickey, and then they can use the doohickey to find...
God's Eye.
God's Eye.
They call it the God's Eye.
It's basically the same MacGuffin that was in the first Charlie's Angels movie, where it can track everyone on Earth using like cell phones and closed-circuit TV cameras.
Basically, yeah.
And so off they go to the Caucasus Mountains and then to Abu Dhabi, because why not?
Yes.
And then it all winds up back in Los Angeles and, you know, lots of cars and drones and helicopters and chicks and ducks and geese. It's a whole thing. I had a great time. It's really, really entertaining. And I didn't know until afterward that apparently there was a lot of Paul Walker footage not yet shot.
Yeah.
And so they had to sort of massively rewrite and re-edit this movie to make it work. And not knowing that, it certainly didn't look like it. It didn't feel like there were these weird, you know, as you pointed out, there's no Bela Lugosi in Plan 9 from Outer Space feeling of, you know, faking it when apparently, clearly they did.
There are a couple moments where you can see the digital work that has been done.
Yes.
To put his face
on one of his brothers,
on one of
apparently.
His brother's bodies. Yeah.
But, you know, but everything's so crazy with the digital now, who knows? What's interesting about the film is that...
Weirdly, I was sort of looking for that because I kept wondering, as you did, what is going to happen to Brian in this film? Like,
every time there's a big explosion or
something, the movie kills him? You know, and you never... It's kind of like watching It Follows because there's this sense of unease as the film goes on. Like, what's going to happen to him? What are they going to do with him? They're not doing anything with him. The movie's going to be over soon. What's going to happen?
Yeah.
No. Like,
because it makes you realize how sort of crazily death-defying these stunts are constantly, and how everyone seems to be walking away from them without a scratch. And so when you're watching in this movie of real life, you're thinking, oh, God, is this where Brian dies? Is this where Brian dies? You know,
like
and,
we were saying, there's such a crazy relationship with death for these characters.
Yeah.
This franchise has such a crazy relationship with the subject of death, that when the intrusion of real-life death hits the film, and the film is forced, whether it wants to or not, to deal with that, how does it deal with that? And what it does is it deals with it in the way that it always deals with that.
Right.
In a way that is weird, but actually very satisfying.
Yeah, I won't spoil it or anything, but it turns out to be just right. And yes, I cried. I don't care.
I know you did. Yeah, so, ahem, therefore, ergo, you do not get to bust my balls about getting all choked up for Giselle, which it might happen again right while we speak.
I will do it anyway.
She sacrificed herself.
I know.
She sacrificed herself for Han.
I know. It was very beautiful.
It was very beautiful and sad, and it made me yell the first day, as you recall. I sat in the theater and was like, no! Like a knucklehead. Like I yelled out loud in the press screening, no.
It was when you got upset at the drive-in when we saw it a second time that I thought, wow, okay, so this really resonated.
Genuinely affected me, yes. I'm not being goofy. I mean, I'm laughing, but I mean, that really it hurt my feelings. Yeah.
Now, Bibbs's complaint about this movie in his review at Crave
Online. Oh, does he have complaints?
His complaint is...
What is them?
It's, I will say that what he points out
why
is...
Why isn't he here?
So that we didn't ask him. What he points out isn't...
Stomp on his opinions to his face.
Isn't not true. He basically says they introduce Statham as this supervillain.
Yes.
And then he's... off screen for big chunks of the movie.
Okay. But, yes, that is correct.
But it didn't bother me because I felt like the enemy in this movie is always sort of, you know, gravity. It's not so much about the bad guy. You know, yes. These are not, it's not like Bond has to have, you know, Blofeld or whatever. These guys, you know, he could be not around and still be a prime mover of the plot and his presence could be felt even when he wasn't on screen. So I didn't miss him when I didn't see him. I was still thinking about him, and I knew that he was the reason why they were running around doing all these, you know, crazy cavorty adventures.
I'm in agreement with you.
You know, there's another bad guy also played by Jaimin Hansu, who doesn't get much to do, but he's a good placeholder just to keep things moving along. Tony Jaa is in this movie. And I will say, you know...
No elephants.
You know that he is dialing it way down to have... fight, because he has two big fights with Paul Walker.
Paul Walker, yeah.
And, I mean, you know, Paul... nothing against Paul Walker, but come on. I mean, Tony Jaa is a whole other level of, mano a mano, you know. It'd be like 1985 Sylvester Stallone versus 1985 Jackie Chan. He like actually does this stuff and knows it inside and out, and then the dude who knows how to sort of convincingly fake it on film. But they both work. You know, you were definitely wigging out during the cars out of the planes.
Don't talk about that stuff.
It's in the trailer.
Is it?
Yes.
I think of it as a spoiler. It's an extravagant, incredible sequence of stunting.
Here's the crazy thing, though. That's the beginning
ish
of an amazing sequence of stunting. Like that's the opening salvo.
But I didn't know. I did not see the trailer before I saw the film, and so it blew my mind.
Yeah.
And got me very freaked out because, you know.
But just it kept
sky and planes.
They kept upping it and upping it, and there, I was noticing, I went through a good period of a minute or two where I don't know that I was blinking.
Right.
You know, all the stuff with the bus.
I was absolutely hyperventilating. Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, just even after that, everything that followed it was just all so exciting and tense and close call-y and, you know, so many cliffs.
I do want to see this at the drive-in in a few weeks when we have a minute to do that.
Definitely.
I'm sure it'll still be there by the time we get there.
I would hope so.
Because the drive-in is really the perfect place.
Yes.
To see these films.
Or IMAX.
If we're going to rank, which is antithetical to the discussion of criticism, or rather, antithetical to criticism, or the discussion of cinema.
I don't know that either of those are true, but let's do it anyway.
But I will say, I used to say that Tokyo Drift was my favorite, but I really can't say that anymore, because I think that Tokyo Drift came along and gave the franchise a kick in the butt when it needed it.
Right.
It took the elements of the first two and loosened them up and blasted them out like a exploding bag of Skittles, and it removed the cast.
Yeah.
From the franchise. Yet somehow made it cinematically more viable.
Right.
As it was exciting to look at. It was gorgeous to look at, and had a sense of it, fun and energy.
It untethered it from the just plain yeah. old vroom vroom.
And then he came back. Justin Lin comes back for 5 and 6 and turns them into wild human cartoons. I think of 6 as the most operatic of them all, and so between now 3 and 6, I think I'm just going to make myself, you know, not pick 3 and 6, Tokyo Drift and Fast Furious 6. Those are my favorites. This one, I'm not going to say the stunts are incredible, 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 incredible. As digital as they often may be, they're incredible. They look amazing. And, but I don't think James Wan yet knows exactly what to do with this cast in terms of their human interactions with one another. Justin Lin had a sense of the jokey camaraderie between them, which really didn't exist until he came along.
And there's some of that. There's, I think
a little, but I think it comes from them. I don't think it comes necessarily from him.
I think they,
and it has been,
they've got their patter down by this point.
It has been, it's definitely been hampered. That's a poor word choice by the death of Walker.
Well, that, yeah, I think you're saying by Lin not being there as well.
And I don't think that he has the same strength of visual presentation.
No,
I don't think his aesthetic is as cool as Justin Lin's. And so,
and there were some moments in this film where I have to say I was a little visually confused. Like, there's a big chase at the end, and at one point, like, an ambulance gets driven off a bridge. And it kind of became this jumble of ones and zeros.
Yes.
Like, I wasn't clear on what was happening because it's nighttime, and it was just not filmed as well as Lin would have, I think.
So I don't think this is quite as good as 6, but it sure is a wonderful experience.
I put it in the middle, but definitely in the top tier, because I think,
yes,
I still think 5 is the best.
Right.
I think 6 is very close behind it, and I think 3 is very close behind 6.
Yeah.
Then this one, but all really good. All four of these movies are really entertaining, and I would unhesitatingly recommend them. Then 1, which I was not a huge fan of, but I get the appeal, and I see where it...
My review, I had to review 1, and almost the entirety of my review was a haiku.
I remember.
In which I encouraged Vin Diesel to kiss Paul Walker.
Yes. The homoeroticism has definitely been toned way down.
Well, yeah, they've amped up the brotherhood and taken down and pulled away from the smoldering glances between men.
Yes, and they've given, like, the women, Michelle Rodriguez gets more to do now, so, you know. So I was thinking, So the first, my top 4 are like high up, and then 1 kind of, you know, it's all right. Then 4, which is dopey and has way too much sort of video game imagery, GPS stuff going on, and then 2.
Yeah, 2 drives me crazy.
Yeah,
I won't retrofit, you know, my opinions to say that I was on board right from the get-go.
No.
I was on board to mock it from the get-go. and then everything changed for me with Tokyo Drift. I was on board with that from
one,
that point
one,
on.
One of the podcasts I always recommend at the end of the show is Film Spotting SVU, and the two people who do it also write online. And Matt Singer at Screen Crush did his list where he ranked them, and he put Tokyo Drift dead last. And then his co-host, Allison Wilmore, over at BuzzFeed, did the same thing and put Tokyo Drift at 1.
Yeah.
So there. We all have our take on this.
There's also a film blogger whose name I won't mention, because he doesn't deserve the attention.
Yes.
Who has come out swinging against film critics who... I gotta plug in my computer because my battery's about to die. Mm-hmm. He's come out swinging against film critics who like these movies.
Yes.
Claiming that that we are all a bunch of effete snobs who are ironically liking these things. Which is, first of all, it's complete nonsense.
Yes.
And if that were the case, that we would ironically like things like Need for Speed, like you were talking about this morning.
Right.
Which is just puke.
Yeah, Need for Speed is terrible. And so, I mean, when people badmouth these movies because, oh, anybody could do this, like, no, anybody couldn't. Like, there are good this kind of movie and bad this kind of movie, and these happen to be really good this kind of movie. The other blogger and his, what was it, lace handkerchief clutching?
Yes, well, that's where I was going next. He insisted on hammering his point home by...
being a creepy homophobe?
By being a creepy homophobe, by emasculating the men he was calling out by name.
Mm-hmm.
And using words like frilly handkerchief and foo-foo and telling them to man up. And then, you know, doing the most doodly thing you can do is name-checking Bullet.
Of course.
Which is what he did. So, I'm glad a real man... Okay, his name is Jeffrey Wells. I'm glad a real man finally showed up to name check Bullet for the rest of us sissies.
Yes.
Jeffrey Wells. That's his name.
The man who complained about Lafka having lunch and called Ingo a Stalinist. And
who said Amy Schumer wasn't hot enough to have sex with.
Right. And yeah. and bragged on Todd Gilchrist's shoes.
Yes. So that's that dude.
Yeah.
I don't know this person at all. At all. I've never met him. But it's crazy sometimes to hear him pop up on the internet with things that he says. But this time around, you know, a little personal, because I like Fast and Furious. And
you like a frilly handkerchief.
I like a frilly handkerchief. Where else are my boogers going to go?
What man doesn't?
We all got boogers. You got to have a frilly handkerchief to collect them. And then wash them, hand wash them.
That's right.
With Woolite.
Yes. Or e-cover.
Well, yeah, we have e-cover.
Do they even still make Woolite? Is that
I'm
a thing?
Sure, yeah, I'm sure they do.
Okay.
What's the other movie?
Woman in Gold.
I'm falling asleep already.
I explained the last one. You gotta recount this one.
All right. Gustav Klimt's Portrait of Adele Bauer-Bloch.
One.
There were two of them. Was stolen by the Nazis from the Bauer-Bloch family. The only members of the Bauer-Bloch family to escape Vienna were Adele Bauer-Bloch's niece, Maria, who married her two nieces, Maria Altman, and her sister, and her and Maria's husband as well, who was an opera singer.
Right.
Yeah. After the war, the painting somehow wound up in the the National Gallery of
Austria.
Of Austria, it is considered to be the Mona Lisa of Austria. So in 1999, Maria Altman, who was in her late 80s at the time, or mid 80s, or I don't know how old she was, late 70s, who knows? She was old.
Yeah.
She enlisted the help of Randall
Schoenberg,
the grandson of the composer. He was an American of Austrian descent.
Yeah, born and raised in L.A.
Yeah. But his parents had all, or his parents or
his grandparents had
escaped the Nazis. Yes.
His father was a judge.
Oh, that's correct. Yes. So anyway, she enlists his help to go after the Austrian government for restitution. And there were laws that were enacted to make this sort of restitution happen. Because thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of paintings and other artworks were just confiscated by the Nazis. And there's so much documentation about this, so many books on this subject. The Rape of Europa, which was then in turn made into a documentary feature of its own. The Monuments Men.
Mm-hmm.
There is a book called The Woman in Gold about this particular painting and the LaCourte case, all about Maria Altman. So this is a fascinating subject and incredibly moving because it's about, you know, pain and separation and the loss of everything, your family, about everything you ever owned. And they have turned it into a boring movie.
Basically.
Directed by Simon Curtis.
Yes.
Who also directed My Week with Marilyn,
which was also a
series. Which is also a wayward romp through history. And Simon Curtis is the husband of Elizabeth McGovern.
Correct. Who has a cameo in this film.
Who is a cameo. She has a cameo as a judge
in this film,
yes. Poor Ryan Reynolds, who I like. He seems lost.
He is really badly miscast.
They give him some really clunky, awkward, emotional, histrionically tearful scenes to enact, which are I felt bad for him while I was watching it. I wasn't like, oh, you're such a bad actor. I just thought I don't envy you in this moment.
His instincts here are all wrong, and it's really bad watching him next to Helen Mirren, because she's great in this, and you can see her. It's such a contrast in acting style, where you can see her sort of working from the inside out to create this woman,
right.
And he is so working from the outside in. Like, he's got these big glasses on,
yes.
And he's just trying to be sort of like to dial it down to be kind of nerdy and sort of uptight starch suit guy. And it just doesn't come naturally to him at all. And I think he's a very instinctive comic actor.
Yes.
And probably capable of doing drama, but not in this movie. It's really weird. And the whole time I kept thinking, I bet this is a fascinating story. Like, I would love to see a documentary about this story. But the movie just kind of it chews your food for you, you know. It takes it knocks everything down to these very sort of recognizable, like, you know, salty old lady, you know, and nerdy young guy become
friends. I wouldn't
call
her salty. I would call
her. But she's tough, you know.
She's sort of imperious and a little bitter, and a lot bitter, really. She's been locked. She's got all of her emotions sort of locked in until they come out.
But
they go to Austria.
She's a lot more extroverted, and
correct.
And, you know, so that their relationship felt familiar. You know, Katie Holmes plays his wife and just gets the, honey, you can't quit your job.
Yeah,
and Chase says, we have kids.
They've given Katie Holmes nothing to do.
You know, that business to play. The Nazi stuff all felt familiar, where they sweep in and take away the art.
The
and,
Nazi stuff had a very TV movie quality.
Yeah.
That I was disturbed by, because, I mean, here's like most. One of the most...
It's a gut-wrenching thing.
Monstrous tragedies of the 20th century, if not the most monstrous tragedy of the 20th century. And
rendered in these...
And it's
just
sort of like, oh, you know, isn't it... Wasn't this sad? What a shame. Isn't it sad?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, it sure was. More than you're giving me.
It's also horrifying, and I'm not getting that. Yeah, so it just felt like... Like, it was just, they took this fascinating, interesting, you know, unpredictable story and just put it in the TV movie history machine and cranked it out into these very kind of bland biscuits.
Mirren is wonderful.
Mirren's great.
Yeah, so if you're going to see it, if you've got to see her in everything, fine.
And Tatiana Maslany, who plays young Maria, is quite good, too.
Orphan Black,
yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, just it feels like you really wish they'd given this to somebody who knew what would have known what to do with it.
Right. And you saw White God.
And I saw White God.
We were going to talk about it last week, and I was going to try to get the chance to see it this week, and I did not. But I am seeing it because I hear it's good.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's
amazing.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
It's beast on our knees.
It's amazing.
Oh, Kroll Show, I miss you already.
It's amazing.
This is a Hungarian film, and it is about... It starts out, it's about a young teenage girl, and she has a dog, a stray dog that she has adopted. And
Benji?
Like Benji.
I loved Benji when I was a little kid.
Yeah, I never saw it.
Tell you about a movie that'll make you cry.
I'm sure. Benji was such a big deal when I was a kid that there was just something in me that was like, no, don't want to.
How is that possible?
I don't know.
You were a child.
I know.
You were part of the marketing.
I know. Group. I was square in the center of the demo, and I just didn't see Benji.
You're so weird. What made you not want to see Benji?
I don't know. I did, however, see Humps, weirdly enough, but, you know.
Freak.
I know.
Humps.
Yes.
Keep talking.
Okay,
I'm going to look up Humps and remind everyone what it is, because
it's from the director of Benji.
I know.
And it's about camels.
Yes.
Anyway, so this the girl's parents are divorced, and her mother, she lives with her mother. The mother's going off to Australia for several months to teach college. So she's living with her father, who works at like a meatpacking plant. And there's some weird rule about how, you know, if you have a dog that isn't a Hungarian purebred, that's like one of these street mutts, you know, there's some fine you have to pay. And the dad doesn't want to pay it because he's pissed at the mother. And, you know, there's some snoopy Gladys Kravitz neighbor in the building who wants to have the dog turned in and, you know, lies and says that it bit her and blah, blah, blah. So basically the dad makes her leave the dog by the side of the road. So the daughter is upset and kind of spinning out of control and just worried about the dog. And the dog, meanwhile, just like one bad thing after another happens to, and like there's a dog fight and, you know, finally winds up in a pound. And it's in the pound when the dog finally sort of fights back and rallies the other dogs. And it's very kind of Rise of the Planet of the Apes, I guess. And it's really powerful, and it's also it's the kind of film that sort of metaphorically loans itself to whatever you want to throw at it. You know, it could be a movie about how Eastern Europe treated their Jews in the 1930s. It could be a movie about, you know, how humans treat the environment, you know, or how we treat dogs even. If you are upset easily about watching dogs being mistreated, this is probably not the movie for you. I knew people who wouldn't see Inside Llewyn Davis until I assured them that nothing bad happened to the cat. And it was kind of the same thing where I was thinking, oh, yeah, you guys don't want to see this. I was having a hard time with this movie, and I usually have a pretty high threshold of not being bothered by that sort of thing. But the dog acting is really great, and they're very empathetic and moving. And there's like a sidekick. You know, I've been calling it the Eve Arden dog, to the main character dog, who's really great. And yeah, it's a really powerful film, as long as you have a stomach for dealing with animals being treated badly, even though they do eventually sort of, you know, get their revenge. I liked it a lot. It's very, very powerful.
I've pulled up the Homps poster. It's from Joe Camp,
yes,
the director of Benji.
Right.
I remember when this came out, but I did not see it. The poster says, very possibly the funniest motion picture of the decade. So screw you, Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein.
It was not.
There's a drawing of a camel.
Right.
H-A-W, M-P-S, like, ha!
Yeah.
Mps. A riotous adventure about camels and the cavalry from Mulberry Square Productions, playing with the short film Benji's Life Story. Do you remember seeing Benji's Life Story with Homps?
I don't. It's quite possible it did screen. I don't remember. Homps, I remember being very long. Like, it was one of the longer movies I saw as a kid. Or maybe just felt that way.
It was like a full 2 hours.
Yeah.
So that's... There, in other places, it was called Stop That Camel. Like, in some other country, but in English.
Well, yeah, because the word, if you, like in the UK, you think the word H-A-W-M-P-S would make any sense.
It doesn't make sense in the United States. So, yeah, that's a thing that happened in the world. There was a movie about camels called Homps.
Yes. What's your DVD pick this week, Dave?
All this Indiana stuff this week.
Mm-hmm. Mystic Pizza?
Mystic Pizza, yes.
No.
With Julia Roberts as the pizza. talking
Pizza of the Hut.
Anthropomorphic pizza. In the shape of Julia Roberts. She walks around looking for love in her little town.
And extra cheese.
Mystic something or other.
Connecticut.
Mystic Connecticut. She wants to be in love with, like, Vincent D'Onofrio or someone like that. Who's the guy?
I forget. There's three girls and three guys. Yeah. I forget who gets matched to
whom. No one can love her because she's a pizza. And she's like, but I'm also a pretty woman. Can't you see the pretty woman standing in front of you who is also a pizza?
Even when I'm bad, I'm still pizza.
Yeah. Look, I could be the worst pizza in the world, but you'd still enjoy me because of how I'm pizza.
Indiana,
people call her pizza face. They're very cruel to her. in the film. So that's my DVD recommendation of the week. Mystic Pizza, with Julia Roberts as the pizza.
I'm sorry I opened that door. Okay, so this week with the Indiana stuff going on, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
Sitting on our TV stand for the longest time has been the DVD of a documentary called Stonewall Uprising that I had never gotten around to watching. And because it's only 80 minutes long, I thought, well, it's 7:30. I can pop this in. It'll be done by 9, and I'll stay awake. And I basically almost did.
Oh, wow.
Through the whole thing. And it's a lot of talking heads, but it's talking heads of people who were actually there. The footage that they use is a collection of riot footage from the time, because very little camera activity took place at the actual Stonewall riot, and or riots, or over the course of several nights.
Yes.
Well, this is when, in the 1960s, you could be arrested and jailed just for being gay.
Yeah, not doing anything.
Not doing anything. Just for being gay in the United States, in every state except Illinois. Hmm. You could be arrested and jailed just for being gay. Just for being gay out in the world. And someone saying, oh, look, a gay, arrest him. Like, that was a thing that could happen to you. Especially if you were with some other gays all together. Then you were gay in a group, and that was, you're all going in. The bars, if you were in a gay bar, you would just be there dancing with your same-sex person, and you would be drinking a beer with your same-sex person, and then the cops would come in, raid the bar, and haul you all off to jail. You could be...
Unless the mobsters that owned the bar had paid the cops off.
Yeah, you could be fired from your job, which is still a thing. You could be kicked out of your apartment or your house, which is still a thing. Not sold a home, which is still a thing. You could also be committed to a mental institution against your will and lobotomized. That is also a thing that happened then. That is not happened. That doesn't happen now. But that is what you could do. And they were talking about the mental hospital here in California, Tuscadero, I think the name of it is. Mm-hmm.
Which we're talking less than 50 years ago.
Yeah, this is when you and I, the decade where you and I were conceived and birthed.
Yes.
So that's the thing that was going on then. And so the Stonewall Inn in New York was run by the mob. And apparently they forgot to pay the cops or something, because the cops came in. Well, right. No, the context was the mayor was running for re-election and he wanted the village cleaned up, you know, because the village is where the freaks were.
Right.
And so he said, get out there and get the freaks off the streets. So the cops beefed up their presence in the village, and they were raiding gay bars. The Stonewall had already been raided not long ago, and another gay bar that very week had been raided. And what happened back then, when they raided, those bars with the gays would just be like, okay, this is our fate. You know, like, and they would all just go off to jail.
Right.
And something was in the air that night, because they were angry.
And there had actually,
and the presence of the cops was making people angrier and angrier.
There had been something similar that had already happened in L.A. pre-Stonewall, I seem to recall.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like that's actually, The Advocate started in 1967 on the heels of something Stonewallish that happened on the West Coast.
Got it.
But Stonewall is sort of the one that is kind of considered the flashpoint of all this. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it's a movie, a documentary about that moment. Mm. And it's really interesting. Again, you know, you've got people who were there. And that's remarkable in itself, because so many of those guys died.
Right.
And
there's a joke in...
And there were some lesbians, too. And so one of the lesbians two of the lesbians, at least, are in the film.
Oh, dude. There's a joke in Love is Strange where John Lithgow's character pretends to have been at Stonewall to get a free drink.
Yes. Well, that's the line I hear from time to time from old gays who are like, if everybody who pretended to be at Stonewall was really there.
Yeah, it's like Woodstock.
Yeah. There's a trans person that gets interviewed who was there.
Okay. And so, the trans people and the drag queens being really the heroes of Stonewall, I think.
Well, yeah, cause,
they were the first to go out to
start cracking heads.
Exactly. Yeah. Mix it up with the cops.
So the yeah. Go find that. All right. That's good.
Stonewall Uprising. Yeah. My pick has to do more with the people who owned those bars. The 25th anniversary Blu-ray of Goodfellas is out this week, and
right on.
I'm not like the biggest Martin Scorsese fan on earth. I think he's made a lot of really great films, and I think he's made other ones that are not so great, or at least, you know, not as great as his best stuff. But he's a fascinating figure in film, just as a cineast himself, and I think as someone who is so enmeshed in the history of film and in film restoration, he's kind of the classy Tarantino, in a way, in terms of film nerds who became filmmakers, you know. But yeah, Goodfellas, there are a handful of movies that I can look back on and just remember vividly the first time I saw them and just coming out afterwards feeling like I had changed or feeling like I had seen something that I'd never seen before and just so excited. And so I remember vibrating after that movie. It was just like I hadn't seen anything like it before, and I just the energy behind it and the way that the story was told. And obviously it's hard to look at it now because it's been so influential. And it's been so quoted since then, both verbally and visually. I mean, heaven knows my film students, like, you know, when they were showing example, you know, for the midterm last semester where they were kind of doing their own filmmaking manifesto and showing examples of things, I saw that Steadicam scene where they walk into the nightclub through the kitchen, you know, I don't know how many times.
Right.
But it's still a great, great movie, and... yeah, I'm psyched to get the Blu-ray.
Letters. This is from Bone Steel.
Oh, Bone Steel, cartoonist, right?
I think so. Is that wrong? Is that right?
I seem to recall didn't he send us some drawings?
All I know is that he's got the best name.
Yes.
I'm writing in to say how much I enjoy your tangents.
Good thing.
Good, because that's 76% of this podcast. I'm honestly waiting for the week where one tangent leads to another, and after about an hour or so, Dave declares the podcast has gone on too long and ends the podcast with no films reviewed. That would make me infinitely happy.
I think the closest we've come was the one where we were about half an hour in, and I said, hey, we haven't introduced ourselves.
It is not that I don't enjoy the movie reviews, because I do. It is more to do with the fact that I just enjoy spending time in your company.
Oh, thanks, Monsieur.
Well, we're pretty great. I mean, you're fast, I'm furious.
No argument here.
I was raised by lesbian parents.
No. Yeah.
And I've always found more comfort with my gay friends than with my straight ones. About a year and a half ago, my wife and I moved from NYC down south, leaving all of our friends gay and straight behind. So your podcast is a reminder of all the friends I miss.
Oh. Where in the south, I'm curious to know.
No, I don't say.
No, I'm just... Also, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to Bone Steel. Go on.
Also... It just fills me with so much joy when Dave is just not being helpful at all. I'm always being helpful.
You must get a lot of joy out of this show.
When he's not really reading the ad copy or being ill-prepared with letters. I'm as prepared as I can be.
You're on
under the circumstances. I have a very stressful life.
You're doing very well this week. You have the letters ready to go.
Love the show and look forward to it every week. Bone Steel.
Thank you.
P.S. If it were not for you guys, I would not have the B-Movies podcast in my life.
Oh, well, great.
Did you hear that, Bibbs?
We gave you one.
You owe us. And I mean to collect. This is from Mint. I like that name, too. Mm. What a good name. Everyone has great names. That dude Bartholomew last week.
Oh, yeah.
I've now been listening to Linoleum Night for about 9 months, and I want to thank you for being a great part of my walk to school every day. I'm currently studying film at Wilfrid Laurier University. I don't even know what that is. And listening to your podcast normally has me smiling stupidly in public. Well, there's a reason for that. For instance, the string of letters about dirty looks to Matt on What the Flick and the continuing conversation about pouring the tea has had me splitting myself. I've been watching What the Flick for years now, really ever since the Michael Phillips and A.O. Scott version of At the Movies was canceled.
Ah.
I've been watching old episodes of At the Movies for years at that point, and it was a habit to watch Ebert's review online before watching any film. What the Flick and Linoleum Knife are the only shows that have taken up that mantle for me.
Oh, wow.
And it's because I often don't agree with you.
Fine.
Also, with Alonzo's defense of movie 43, I am one of the few who loved the RoboCop remake, and even more controversially, Transformers 4, and your reviews of those films helped me to better describe what I like about those films. Enough of my babbling. I have two lists for all right. You, my all-time top 10 and my top 10 underrated of 2014. Let's do them both.
Sure.
Top 10 underrated of 2014.
Okay.
Number 10. That awkward moment.
No! We don't agree, Mint.
Mint says, for Miles Teller and Mackenzie Davis.
No.
Number 9. Draft day for the last 40 minutes.
Yeah. That was all right.
I'll give you Draft Day.
I didn't hate Draft Day. That was an interesting...
I don't think I hated Draft Day.
That was an interesting what people do at their jobs movie.
Okay. The Interview.
Okay.
For Katy Perry. I'll give you that, too. 7. Annie.
I didn't see it.
No!
I didn't see it, but you did.
Because Courtney Wallace is charming. Well, she is charming. But oh my God, that movie. That poor child. That's all I can sit, all I can think every time I think of Annie is that poor child. Like I want Child Protective Services to come get that kid from that movie.
She's gonna go to Stanford and, you know,
good.
Become a molecular biologist or something.
Good.
It'll be just this funny thing that happened to her.
Men, Women, and Children.
Woo!
Because I wanna underrated is definitely what you know what the word underrated means. Because I honestly believe it would be really good if not for the terrible voiceover. I do not agree with that at all. You could take out the terrible voiceover, and I still think you would have a rotten movie.
I didn't see that one either, thankfully.
Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm into that.
I like that. That was underrated.
Transformers 4?
No.
I'm going to give him that.
Uh-uh.
Because you know how I am
with
the Transformers.
You're a fool.
This Is Where I Leave You. The family dramedy ensemble with the funeral and the Shiva and the...
Ew!
Yeah, I'm with you. It's not...
No.
I really hated that one, too. 300 Rise of an Empire. Because Eva Green.
Well,
I'm going to give you Eva Green.
Okay.
Yes. RoboCop. Let us add up the score of Mint.
Okay.
All right.
Mint Royale.
That awkward moment? No. Okay. Draft Day, yes. Interview, yes. Jack Ryan, yes. Transformers 4, yes.
That's a half thing.
Eva Green, yes. 50. That's 5.
Okay, but... fine, whatever.
You're 50% knife, Mint. That means you failed! You get nothing!
You stole fizzy lifting drinks.
Good day! Top 10 of all time.
Okay. Maybe you'll do better this time.
Mint. Broadcast News.
Yes.
Yeah, Casablanca.
Yes.
Yeah, Lethal Weapon. Yeah.
Okay.
Lone Star. You know, I never saw Lone Star.
Really?
Never saw Lone Star.
It's one of the...
You'd think I would, right?
But yeah, it's one of...
I've never seen Lone Star.
It's one of my favorite John Sayles movies, yes.
Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah.
Yes. The Social Network. Yes. Yeah. Agnès Varda's Le Bonheur. Yes.
Didn't see it, but if it's Agnès Varda, I say yes.
Before Sunset. Yes.
Yes.
The Departed. Yes.
Yes.
Sideways. Yes.
Yes.
Mint, you got 100%.
All right.
You're 100% knife. The letter ends with sincerely Mint. M-Y-N-T. That's a good name.
Did you say Before Sunset or Before Sunrise?
Before Sunset.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. Even better. Good.
P.S. If you haven't found the site letterboxd.com yet, I would highly recommend it.
I've heard of it. I've never been. I know people go and leave ratings there, and I'm afraid it's one of those internet K-holes I would never get out of, so I've never been.
That's all the letters. I know I am sitting on some letters that I cannot find. If we have not read your letter and it's a few weeks old, forgive me. It's in my inbox somewhere. I'm going to retrieve it. I am not the worst person in the world yet. But I'm trying to become the worst person. If you could see what I see right now, you would see Alonzo giving me what we call in this house the Uli. Uli is a dude we know who's great. He's German. His name is Ulrich.
Lives in San Francisco.
Everybody calls him Uli. But when he disapproves, he gives you the Uli.
The slow...
It's a slow...
Back and forth.
Deadpan, back and forth. Shake of the head. Headshake. Not a frown, not a smile. Serious, deadpan face. That's the Uli. You're giving me the Uli right
now.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Back and forth.
I'm sorry, and I'm going to get the letters... I am.
Well, if Bone Steel likes it when you're incompetent, you've scored again, Dave White.
Do we have anything to sell to people?
Well, we have our Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife of the Poseidon Adventure.
Yes.
Which is available for $1.99. Just PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com and include your email address. We'll shoot that over to you. Also available are our episodes about Clue, Two for the Road, Josie and the Pussycats, and The Apple. We are putting together our proposed subscription service idea, and we've been getting some very good recommendations from people about
things y'all want.
Things you want on a tote bag and additional, you know, material you'd like us to record and that kind of thing. So we are looking at that stuff and figuring it out, and we will hopefully have a strategy mapped out soon, and we'll let you know when you can become a subscriber to the program. The show will remain free. The show will always be free.
Yeah, nothing's changing. We're not going to charge you for anything.
Yeah, this show will always be free. Yeah. But for people who want more stuff, whether it's more audio or more tangible goods from this program, we will make that happen.
Yeah.
As always, we thank Blue for our theme music, and you can find more about his wonderful work at Bluetopia.com, Bluetopia. And, of course, we urge you to check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Check out the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, the Schmoes Know, the Bret Easton Ellis podcast. Over at Wolf Pop, check out the Rotten Tomatoes podcast and the Canon and Malton on Movies. Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion cast, Film Spotting SVU, the Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at iTunes, and if you want to leave us a nice review there, that would be great. I don't have it. I've got to remember to have it in front of me. We've gotten some reviews lately that have been very nice, and we really appreciate them. And those good reviews help us help people find the show.
Every time I go to iTunes and I look up the reviews, I can't find any of the new ones that you say are there.
Because you have to, you can click the thing to make it show you most recent first.
I do that, and they still aren't there. What's wrong? Why does nothing work?
It could be with you anything. I can't imagine what of the many options exist of what you're doing wrong to mess everything up. Because there are so many choices there, Dave White. You can also stream this program
for
free.
How is it that I can be so good in the kitchen?
In the
bedroom. and be so terrible at the computer.
We're all given our gifts in this life. You can stream the program for free at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com or on a handy app on our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife
Podcast. It's like they hate me. It's like computers don't like me personally.
Well, it's because you know what you did.
You know what I didn't do? Make the police happen in this
apartment. God, let it go. There's an app you can stream the show on our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. And if you haven't liked it yet, please do.
The old stingaroo.
It's the kind of thing we like to... We want to try and sell ads on this dang show, and it looks good if we have a lot of likes on our Facebook page. Also, join our Linoleum Knife group page on Facebook, where our listeners talk to each other about movie stuff. And subscribe to our YouTube channel, where we've been posting some of our oldest episodes
apparently,
as YouTube
on the
files.
Group page today, someone has posted a photo of the last Nicholas Sparks movie. Called The Best of Me? The Best of Me?
Yeah.
The Tears of Joy Edition Blu-ray? I don't know what that means. Also, it says, now with new storybook ending? It also makes no sense to me. Like, I'm kind of curious. Did they go back and... Did they shoot a different ending?
It was a flop. Maybe they thought they'd want to give it like a less... Like, Everyone Lives.
A movie that's less die-y at the end.
I don't know.
I'm a little curious, but not so curious that I'll actually watch it again. So whoever's out there...
If you've seen the storybook ending...
If you've seen the storybook ending, I need to know. Just tell me.
Maybe it's on the wiki page or something. Follow us on Twitter, at LinoleumCast. You can follow me at A. Duraldi, A-D as in David, U-R-A-L-D-E. Or follow Dave at D. Leland White, D-L-E-L-A-N-D-W-H-I-T-E. And again, our email address is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. where you can send us any comments, questions, top 10 lists, and where you can PayPal us for our extra episodes. There's not a lot opening next week, but...
There's only one big movie opening next week. The Longest Ride.
Right, and then there's some smaller stuff as well.
But
we'll be back to talk about that, and heck, who knows what else.
What are we going to have for dinner?
Tonight?
I don't know what... To have.
Let's take this conversation off mic.
All I can think of, though, is what I want to eat, and I don't know what I want.
Well, all you have to say at this point is...
There's a can of enchilada sauce on the counter.
Well, you just end this...
But I don't have any chicken. Like, I could make enchiladas if there were chicken. I don't have any cheese for it either.
Would you please just
I have to go to the grocery store. We're just going to get a pizza.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.